It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So you fancy yourself a top-notch Pirates fan, and you think you know everything there is to know about your Buccos. Well, I'm guessing there are more than a few facts about the team that you are not aware of, not to mention a few close encounters with the Pirates you've yet to experience. Well, today is your lucky day. Post-Gazette Sunday Sports editor Steve Zients has written a book called 100 Things Pirates Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And he's here to share those ideas with us. And by the way, Steve is holding a book signing tomorrow at Barnes & Noble at Settlers Ridge Center Drive. That's tomorrow night at 6:30. He joins us by phone. Steve Zients, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
What inspired you to write this book, to put it together? Pirates fans are very dedicated. And are there really that many things, 100 things, that Pirates fans don't know about them?
Well, I'm not sure that they don't know about them, but it certainly wasn't difficult to get to 100. In fact, it was probably more difficult to get down to 100 because of the Pirates' long history in the city and in baseball.
Right. The Pirates are one of the older teams in Major League Baseball. So does that give them or you a leg up on most other teams in terms of talking about that rich history? I mean, let's face it, you're not going to get much mileage out of a book called 100 Things About the Tampa Bay Devil Rays Fans Should Know Before They Die, are you?
Not really. And I pity the writer that would try to do that. And this book has been done by Triumph Publishing, has done this book in quite a few other cities in quite a few other different ways. But this is the first time they've done it with the Pirates, and I certainly felt fortunate to be able to do it. As I said, there's such a rich history in Pittsburgh with baseball. I think people forgot about that during the recent 20 years of losing.
So, all right, what are some of the big ones on the list here?
Well, I don't think anybody will be surprised at number one. It occurred October 13th, 1960, when Bill Mazeroski hit the home run that maybe is the most famous home run in baseball history to win the 1960 World Series for the Pirates. This is a history book that isn't told in chronological order. We tell it in the most, you know, from the most important to maybe the most obscure, but still stories that have a good texture to them, or that have a nice twist, and things that I've told people before, it's a lot of things that Pirates fans maybe forgot they knew, or maybe forgot they remembered.
Well, everybody knows about Maz's home run. I mean, people in Pittsburgh all know about it, whether they follow baseball or not. But I'm guessing that one of the things that a baseball fan would be interested in knowing was, and you can confirm this for us, is that game, now this is Game 7 of the World Series, which was televised, so there were commercials in there, and 19 runs are scored. It goes to the bottom of the ninth, 10-9 game, and it took, like, what, 2 hours and 18 minutes to play it?
It was certainly quick. I mean, you didn't have all the TV timeouts. You didn't have all the pitchers walking around the mound. The game was just shown recently on local TV here again.
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah,
and it's incredible the pace of the game. Players weren't always stepping out. They weren't adjusting their batting gloves. I'm not even sure how many had batting gloves, if any at all, in that game. You know, it was just a quickly played game, as most games were back then.
What are some of the things that you reveal about the Pirates that might really surprise people?
Well, there was a game in Houston back in the mid-70s. The Pirates actually played in the only rainout at the Houston Astrodome. How does that happen? It was just a very bizarre day, but that's one of the things that you'll find in the book.
Oh, you're not even going to reveal that?
Well, there was a lot of rain. It was there was flooding throughout the city that day. As much as 8 to 10 inches of rain fell in Houston, and while the teams could get to the stadium, the fans couldn't get there, and the parking lots were flooded, and the Astrodome actually was built below ground level, so a lot of the ramps into the stadium were flooded. You couldn't get through the players' parking lots were flooded. they ended up having a cookout on out around second base that night. imagine that. You're in this cavernous, the eighth wonder of the world, as it was called then, and you've turned it into a company picnic shelter where they're grilling up chicken and steaks, and the players are sitting around at second base eating food, and it's just completely empty. And that's how they waited until they could get back to their hotel.
Were there some things that you learned in putting together this book that surprised even you?
I think the importance and the impact of Ralph Kiner. He was a great home run hitter here in the late 40s and early 50s. I knew his numbers. I knew that he'd gone on to a successful career with the Mets. He made the Hall of Fame. But I didn't realize just how much he transcended the Pirates and transcended the game. People literally come out to watch him play. He played on some very bad Pirates teams. But still, I lost the date here in my head. It was either 1950 or 51. The Pirates draw 1.5 million people to Forbes Field. They didn't draw 1.5 million people throughout the decade of the 70s when they won 6 division championships and 2 World Series. But these people came out to watch Ralph Kiner hit. He was the highest paid player in the game. He dated movie stars. He dated Elizabeth Taylor, and he dated Janet Leigh. People came out just to watch him hit, to watch him hit home runs. They finished, I think, a combined 165 games out of first place in his years here in Pittsburgh. But he was such an attraction that people wanted to pay to see how far he could hit a ball or how many home runs he could hit.
The late Ralph Kiner, he just passed away recently, and the Pirates are wearing, I believe, a number. His number was 4 with the Pirates,
yes.
Right?
So I believe he may be the only person to have a patch worn by 2 different teams in the year he died, because the Mets are also wearing a patch in his honor.
Right. He was their announcer for many years. One of the people that you write about in this book is Curt Roberts, the Pirates' forgotten pioneer, as you call him. What can you tell us about him?
Ironically, Branch Rickey, who brought Jackie Robinson into baseball in 1947 with the Dodgers, was also the general manager of the Pirates by that time. This was 1954, and the Pirates had yet 7 years after Jackie Robinson, the Pirates, like many teams in baseball, had still not integrated their roster. And Branch Rickey identified Curt Roberts as the player that would do that. He was a slick-fielding second baseman. He preceded Bill Mazeroski as the second baseman on the team, but they thought with his speed and good fielding that he could be the player that would help the Pirates integrate. And in that first year, he didn't succeed. He was an okay player, but he wasn't Jackie Robinson. He wasn't Monty Irvin. He wasn't Larry Doby. Pretty much the only reason we remember him as a player is because he was the first black player on the team. And was gone from Pittsburgh by within 2 years, and pretty much was out of baseball by that time, and really was forgotten. And in fact, when he died, some of his teammates didn't even know he died for 20 years. And it's sad. But I'm glad that I was able to include him here, because he certainly, he was the first, and there are a lot of firsts in this book, and he was he certainly needed to be mentioned.
We're talking with Steve Zients. He is author of 100 Things Pirates Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And what book about Pirates history would be complete without a passage on Doc Ellis's LSD no-hitter? urban legend or not, Steve?
I cannot find anybody, or I could not find any documentation that said he didn't do it. He claimed until his death that he pitched a no-hitter in San Diego in the early 70s, while after having taken a hit of LSD earlier in the day. The funny thing about that was he was in Los Angeles at the time. He didn't even know not only that he was pitching that night, but that the Pirates even had a game. He thought it was a day off.
Right.
And he gets to the ballpark within just a few hours before game time and goes out there. He figures, I'm in no shape to pitch. I'll get pulled in the first inning. I'll get pulled in the second inning. Well, he goes 9 innings and pitches a no-hitter. And while his story may have changed, there may have been some details that differed throughout. I never came across any source material that said that he didn't do it.
We have about a minute or so left. Do you have a favorite story in here, Steve?
Oh, a favorite story. Well, I'd have to say, and it's sad, but it's a personal thing, that if there was only one story I could have written, it was the death of Roberto Clemente. He was an idol of mine, and I was glad that I was able to actually get my feelings and thoughts out about the morning that he died. I know it affected a lot of Pittsburghers, and it certainly affected a lot of kids my age who were growing up at the time and wanted to be Roberto Clemente.
The book is 100 Things Pirates Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, and the writer, the author, is Post-Gazette Sunday Sports Editor Steve Zients, who has joined us by phone. Steve, thanks for being with us, and thanks for sharing your stories about the Pirates.
Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, what's being done to attract more immigrants to the Steel City? And we'll meet a local entrepreneur whose invention is creating a buzz in the world of menswear. That is tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh. And if you missed any portion of the program or there are past segments you'd like to get caught up on, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.